Dave Albee has traveled the country covering some of the biggest sports events around: World Series, Super Bowls, NCAA playoffs, World Cup, NBA, NHL playoff games. But a brand new project brought him back home to Dover, Foxcroft, Maine, to tell the remarkable story of a championship team and the way it affected the people in a number of towns in the area. The book is called The Last One Out of Town, Turn Out the Lights. Dave Albee joins us. And Dave, man, I was caught up in this right away. And you never know with books about high school sports, but this has got it all. It's Friday Night Lights. It's Hoosiers. And man, it happened right up the road for me. And I knew some of the story of being a high schooler at the time, but you have done such great work. And it's a remarkable read. And yes, it's about sports, but it's more about small towns and the people who call them home.
That's sort of the way I approached it. And when I decided to do this project back in, God, I think it was November of 2022 is when I started doing the interviewing. It just took me places I hadn't, stories I hadn't heard before, places I hadn't heard about before. It's just an incredible time. It's a very nostalgic look at Maine high school basketball back in the 60s and 70s, and the connection of Monson and Dover Foxcroft and the star player that came from that, and the only state championship that Foxcroft Academy has ever won, and it's a basketball championship in its 200-year history.
Well, it is a remarkable story, and we'll talk about the basketball and that incredibly memorable season that ended with the only gold ball for Foxcroft Academy basketball. But, boy, the backstory is great, too. Well, and let's maybe start with your backstory. You mentioned that you grew up in Dover Foxcroft, and it was, I guess, a chance encounter at the A&P that led to your sports writing career.
Well, I at that time I was I had gone to a radio broadcasting school in Boston, thinking I was going to become the next Johnny Most, and obviously that didn't work out as I had planned. So I came back to my hometown, needed a job to pay off my college debt, and took a job at the A&P grocery store on North Street in Dover, Foxcroft. And one of the customers that came in there was a woman by the name of Ree Miller. Her husband was the town manager in Dover, Foxcroft, and she was working as the sports editor at the Piscataquis Observer. So I would strike up a conversation with her every week when she came in to get her groceries. And that particular December of 1973, Foxcroft had probably one of its best teams in 20 years. And they were opening up the season at Orono against the Red Riots. And Orono was the defending state champion at the time. So I mentioned to her in conversation in the grocery store, I said, "Are you going to the big game this Saturday night?" And she says, "No, I'm not. I really don't know a lot about basketball." And for whatever reason, the next words out of my mouth were, "Well, would you like me to go and I'll cover the game?" And I had no journalism experience whatsoever. She says, "Yeah, go ahead." So that Saturday night, I drive to Orono, cover the basketball game. On Sunday, I write out the game story longhand. On Monday, I turn in the game story to the Piscataquis Observer. And on Tuesday, I get a phone call from Jim Thompson, the editor publisher of the newspaper, and he offers me a full-time job right there. So that's how my 35-year sports writing career started.
I love it. Well, I have to tell you, the story that got me hooked in the book, and because I read it all, you know, I got the book yesterday. I read the whole thing last night. And it's because you hooked me with the story of the Monson Slaters. I knew a little bit about them, but wow, what an incredible and poignant story that was.
Yeah, and what a time it was. This goes back to small-town basketball in Maine. I think I mentioned in the book at one point in the 60s and 70s, there were like 36 class S schools in the state of Maine playing small town basketball. And today, only six of those 36 still exist. And that was a consolidation area. And Monson wound up consolidating with Dover, Foxcroft, Sebeck, and Charleston. School Administrative District 68. The thing about this, Rich, is Monson had a tremendous basketball tradition. They had won the state class S championship in 1968, and that was about the time they were talking about doing a consolidation. So this whole talk about the consolidation basically divided a town. I mean, they wanted their children to get a better education. That was the route to go. But they had such a tremendous civic pride for the basketball team, and you know, basically the 69 season was their last season. And then the consolidation happened, and they closed Monson Academy, and the students were bused, 20 miles from Monson to Dover-Foxcroft. And that led to eventually led to a state championship for Foxcroft Academy.
Boy, it brought back some great names that I remember. Well, as you mentioned often in the book, I remember George Hale talking about little Stevie Bray and Buddy Levitt and some of these guys. So many great memories.
Yes, that's right. Stevie Bray is a good, real good friend of mine. And in fact, Stevie's going to be going to the book launch in Dover-Foxcroft on Wednesday. And George... And Rich, you were very helpful in the book in reminiscing about George and how he meant, what he meant to high school basketball in the state of Maine. I mean, he was an icon. I mean, I grew up listening to him on a Philco in my living room doing play-by-play for WABI. And he was this god, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, maybe the greatest, the most renowned Maine sportscaster ever. And he was very prominently mentioned in this book because Foxcroft eventually got the opinion that George was very much an Orono fan, and was showing bias towards Orono, and his funny stories about that in the book. George was just doing his job, and he did a tremendous job in promoting high school basketball in Maine.
And I know if you talk to the Orono guys, they would probably say, hell, all he did was talk about Kevin Nelson. Which to me, and George always said, that was how you knew you were doing a good job, if half the people thought you were in favor of one team and half thought it was the other team.
It's amazing because, Matt, I remember growing up and again, we're talking about an era where TikTok was actually the sound your grandfather clock made, and and Facebook was basically the list of posters of FBI most wanted in the post office. That was Facebook. And so the Hill point system, the rankings would come out, and George is probably the first one would have the rankings. And you watch his sportscast during the week. And you'd be glued to the TV set. Where's Foxcroft? And Foxcroft, of course, did not have a very good basketball tradition. And you'd always look, and they were maybe 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th on the cusp of getting into the tournament with the top 8 teams. So George will come out with this big reveal every week, and that was sort of the big thing. People would get in front of the sets, and where's Foxcroft this week?
Well, and then you mentioned consolidation, and when Monson closed, the ultimate indignity that the bus stop was right there in front of the old Monson Academy.
Yeah, that's funny. When I was back doing research, I was with Steve Bray, in fact, and Glenn Poole, who's the president of the Monson Historical Society. We went up to their old high school gymnasium, which still exists. It's a Quonset hut. And the school of Monson Academy has been torn down. And I asked Steve, I said, where did the bus pick you up each day to take you to Foxcroft? And he says, right here. And I'm going, right here in front of where Monson Academy used to be? And he goes, yeah. And I thought that was sort of, if I'm a Monson student, I'd be kind of be rubbed in my face. And every day you go to Monson Academy to get on a bus. You can't go to Monson Academy because the doors are closed to you, but you can get on the bus and go to Foxcroft Academy.
Yeah, it is.
That must have been a really difficult time for those students and those student athletes.
Remarkable
story. Making that transition.
We're talking with Dave Albee. His book is The Last One Out of Town, Turn Out the Lights. Well, two great characters in the story come together with consolidation. One, a young man from Monson who made his way to Foxcroft Academy, and a native of Dover Foxcroft who was hired to be the basketball coach. Talk about that meeting of the minds between Kevin Nelson and the great Skip Hansen.
Well, Skip, Kevin grew up in Southeast Monson with a population of about 50, he was sort of going to be the next big thing to play at Monson Academy and winds up going to Foxcroft Academy instead. And about the time, I think it was Kevin was in eighth grade in Dover Foxcroft at Dover Grammar School. That's when Skip was hired at Foxcroft Academy to come back and coach the basketball team there. And as I mentioned earlier, Foxcroft had no big basketball tradition. When Skip was at Foxcroft Academy, he played for 4 years and they never made the tournament once. In fact, there was a period of time from 1952 to 1963, 12 years, where Foxcroft did not make the tournament. And teams, every other school like Milo and Brownville Junction and Monson and Dexter and Guilford were making the tournament. Anyway, Skip comes back and he's only had like 2 years of experience at Higgins Classical Institute, but he's coming back to his hometown to basically coach kids that he knows and he knows their parents. So it was a really difficult situation to come into. And then you've got the influx of Monson students coming down to play basketball, and he has to make difficult decisions rather who to cut regarding Monson players and Dover players. So anyways, Skip's keeping an eye on Kevin when he's in eighth grade. And Skip tells a story that he didn't think Kevin was ready to play on the varsity as a freshman because he couldn't jump very well. And then Skip and his assistant coaches saw Kevin the first day of practice at Foxcroft Academy. And Skip turns to his two assistant coaches and he tells him, "Don't ever let me take him out of the lineup." So Skip had decided that what he thought of Kevin Nelson as an eighth grader was certainly different than what he thought of Kevin Nelson as a freshman. And he invited Kevin into his office and basically said, "Listen, we kind of like to have you on varsity, but we don't want to overwhelm you. And we basically want to leave the decision up to you." And Kevin thought it would be better for him. He says he could have, you know, could have balked and stayed on the freshman team or the JV team, but he thought he felt comfortable with the upperclassmen and the seniors on the Foxcroft team that year. And he said, "Look, why not?" So Kevin became a starter at Foxcroft Academy as a freshman.
And you mentioned he had to make some tough decisions and cut some young men. And you've coached, I've coached, any of us who've done that know that's always the hardest thing you do. And knowing Skip the way I do, I know how much. Well, it seems like that still weighs on him today.
It does. And there was one story in the book about he ended up dismissing two co-captains from the team during Kevin Nelson's sophomore year. And that was a really difficult decision. In fact, Skip, when he got into the administrative aspect of it, actually created a policy that would address situations like that to make it better. But he had a lot of remorse for it. But he had, you know, Rich, he made a lot of difficult decisions with cutting players and dealing with players and playing players and sitting players down. But it seems like throughout the book, every decision that Skip made turned out to be right, the right decision. And even to the state championship game, when he decided to play a kid named Peter Snow, who hadn't played a second the previous week in the Eastern Maine championship game against Orono, he's the first guy off the bench against Madonic Valley. And he has a game of his life. At that time, he was a junior and he scored 7 points, had 3 rebounds and swayed the momentum in Foxcroft's favor. Just a bit, you know, sort of the X factor in the games.
It was so great for me, too. There are so many wonderful characters, real-life characters in the book, and so many of them that have played a big part in my life. I did my student teaching at Old Town. My assistant principal there was the great Lionel Bishop.
Lionel Bishop, yes. Yeah, Skip and Lionel ended up going to Aroostook State, along with my brother. My late brother wound up going to Aroostook State, and they played soccer up there because they couldn't play football anymore. Aroostook State didn't have a football team, so they played soccer. And Lionel's actually the one who tells a funny story about Skip and how he met his wife Peg, and they've been married forever now. But Skip was an incredible competitor. In fact, when Skip wound up at Higgins Classical Institute, Lionel was at East Corinth at Central High School, and he ended up forming a semi-pro team, and Skip played on that. And there's some funny stories about Skip that period of time playing, and he was an incredible player and a very fiercely competitive player. Tony Hamlin told a funny story about going up against Skip in the book in a semi-pro game. That's a funny story.
Well, and Dennis Kaya, who I was Dennis's JV coach in Brewer, and Dennis is responsible in large part for me being to Brewer and becoming a varsity coach. And some of those stories are classics, and I was so happy to read the starter's pistol story in there, which has become a Dennis Kaya classic.
Yeah, as Dave Clement said, there are a million Dennis Kaya stories, and that's probably one of that's probably the number one story with the starter pistol, and you know how that went.
Man, and I'm imagining the intensity of some of those weekend pickup games with the faculty members at Foxcroft Academy.
And they had a tremendous faculty team too. Wayne Champion played at the University of Maine.
Right.
Was on that team, and Skip was on the team, and Dennis Kaya was on the team. Paul Draper, who played at PCHS, was on a team. Rusty Klukey was on that team. Dave Clement, who was a 1,000-point scorer at Thomas College. And I think I made a remark in the book that during that 74-75 season, probably the toughest team that Foxcroft varsity basketball team played was the faculty team. And they would scrimmage with them every once in a while. And that team, that faculty team, was pretty good. In fact, I talked to Joe Champion, Wayne's youngest son, and Joe said that he was at 40 years old. Wayne was probably still the best player in the building, best basketball player in the building at Foxcroft that time. It was a good time and some great stories about those games.
Well, Kevin Nelson's junior year, Foxcroft Academy had a heck of a team, and what a duo with Kevin Nelson and Kevin Saunders, who would go on to have a great career at Husson College as well, but came up a little short. And always the thorn in their side was that Orono High School Red Riots team.
That's true. In fact, many people will tell you the 1973-74 team with Kevin Saunders and Kevin Nelson was probably a better team than the state championship team in 1975. That was a great combination, those two guys, and they came up together. And Orono was always in the way. I think there was at one point that Orono had beaten Foxcroft in boys varsity basketball 34 out of 35 times. And it just seems that Foxcroft couldn't get over the hump in trying to get by Foxcroft. And that was a classic battle, Kevin Nelson's junior year against Orono in the Eastern Maine Championship game. Foxcroft had the game won, and Kevin fouled out of the game and on the so-called phantom foul.
The phantom foul, yes, a legendary play.
There's a great story about that, Rich. I don't know how much time you've got, but the one story that is when that foul happened, and again, Foxcroft had about a five-point lead with about a little under 2 minutes to play, was in control of the game. And Tom Philbrick goes up for a shot, makes a basket, and in the process, Kevin Nelson is whistled for a foul. And it was Kevin's fifth foul, except Kevin didn't foul him. Kevin didn't touch him. And actually, Tom Philbrick went to Del Merrill, the official, and said, "Deli, he didn't touch me." But referees are going to call the calls they make. And he called a foul, and Kevin fouled out of the game. And that just swayed the momentum, and Tommy Philbrick took over from there. Skip Hansen had heard the conversation between Tom Philbrick and Del Merrill. And Skip says to this day how he holds Tommy Philbrick in high esteem for telling the truth in that moment.
As you point out in the book, you cannot tell the story of the success of Foxcroft Academy basketball in the mid-70s without talking about the impact of the FA band and the great Bob Thorne.
Yes, Bob Thorne, yeah. That's a great story, too, that I stumbled across. Bob Thorne was hired out of a striptease club in Waterville.
I love that story. That's great.
He was performing there in an orchestra, in the orchestra at the striptease club by a woman named Lil Atherton, who was the music director, wanted to turn the fortunes of the FA band around. And it was recommended that she interview Bob Thorne, and she interviewed him in the strip club in Waterville, and Bob ended up taking the job, and the rest is history as far as FA basketball, the FA band is concerned. I can remember growing up, and again, Foxcroft, when it was very fortunate in those days in the early 70s and late 60s to get in a tournament, and whenever they went there, they were probably seeded seventh or eighth, and were bound to lose to either Orono or Skink. But the Foxcroft band would go there. And I remember reading the Bangor Daily News the next day after. And the Bangor Daily News would always remark about how great the band was. And basically, the band had a better reputation than the basketball team. And it carried with them. And Bob did a wonderful job in turning that program around and building it to what it became. And, you know, they were the top of the shelf and as bands in high school basketball and high school. And Bob was remarkable, and there was a connection between Skip Hansen and Bob Thorne, and the band got along with the players and the band's Tunes were very inspirational for the basketball team. And
well, I was a trumpet player in high school, and yeah, I remember playing the horse a whole lot at basketball games.
Yes.
But apparently that song belongs to Foxcroft Academy.
Yeah, that song came out in 1968, and Bob Thorne, because of the name The Horse, decided to have the band play it with Foxcroft's nickname being the Ponies. It was a natural thing to do. And that sort of became their anthem throughout the whole time. In fact, I talked to Jeff Thorne, who also played the trumpet. Jeff was Bob Thorne's son, and Jeff said, "I played that song until my lips turned blue." But it was a really inspirational tune, and my fondest memory of that song being played is when Foxcroft played Madomic Valley in the state championship game in 1975 in the Augustic Civic Center, and the band would always play that song once before a game, and they played it twice this time, and everybody that was there from Foxcroft, and we're talking pretty much the whole town, so there's probably 30,000, 4,000 Foxcroft fans there. So the band is playing the song, and every single one of the Foxcroft fans is standing up around and clapping along with the song as it's being played. And I mentioned just to Al Barron, the star player from Madomic Valley, and Al was a little bit intimidated by the show of support that Foxcroft had through this song, The Horse. And it was just a special tune. And I was talking to Dick Hack recently, and he says he still plays that song. 50 years later, he still plays that song.
Well, and you mentioned that Madomic Valley matchup. That was an epic battle, and Al Barron certainly a worthy adversary for Kevin Nelson. But this sure seemed to be a team of destiny by that point.
Yeah, I think and Madomic would probably tell you they felt that they were a team of destiny too. I mean, you had two undefeated teams playing in a Class B state championship game. I think in Madomic Valley, that season in 1975 was the only number one seed in a regional tournament to be playing in the state championship game. I think in Class A, it was Westbrook and somebody else played in there, but they were like the number three seed and number five seed. And Foxcroft was actually the number two seed that year, but they were both 22-0. They go to the state championship game. The place is packed, the Augustic Civic Center. The game was not on TV for whatever reason, and I tried looking into that, and the only thing I could come up with is apparently they didn't have enough sponsorship to put it on TV, because wow, the Augustic Civic Center was wired for to do TV at that time. But it was just a tremendous game. In the game, no more than 5 points separated the teams throughout the game. It went down to the wire. Madomic came in. They had averaged like 90 points a game during the Western Maine tournament. In the opening game, in the quarterfinals of the Western Maine tournament, they played Camden Rockport, their big rival, their Orono. And Camden Rockport was the defending state champion. And Madomic beat them by 40 points in the quarterfinal. And they just steamrolled into the Augusta Civic Center. Foxcroft was a very formidable point, and pretty much everybody favored Madomic would win that game. So it was a surprising result and a very low scoring game. Like I said, Madomic only scored 53 points in the state championship game after averaging 90 in the Western Maine tournament.
It was the first state championship for Foxcroft Academy basketball, and 50 years later, it remains their only championship in basketball, and I think the overall feel of this book certainly made me look back fondly on those times, because things are so much different today. And look, the tournament is still a big deal, particularly for small towns, but I don't know that a community could come together and would come together now the way it did in the mid-1970s for this championship.
I would agree with you on that. It's there's so much more. There's so many different sources of entertainment nowadays and distractions. But when you were growing up in that era, the high school, the local high school basketball team was the central focus of the community. And I remember, the Aroostook County teams coming down and bringing busloads of fans down to the tournament. Van Buren and, Manawaska, Caribou, those kinds of schools, that they would bring boatloads of of fans down and buses. And,
right. And I always loved the fact at the tournament, too, that it was very much a regional thing. When the last Washington County team was playing, all the other Washington County fans would cheer for them. Same thing with Aroostook County and Piscataquis County.
Well, maybe not. Dexter being Penobscot, not with Dexter, but Dexter was in Penobscot County, so right. That's fine. But it was it was just eight teams that made the tournament then, and Rich, you know this. Basically, every high school team at the start of the season, your number one goal is to make the tournament. That's it. Just get to the tournament. And like I said, Foxcroft went years without going, and all of a sudden, this team comes along and. I think Kevin Nelson described it as like a meteor going through Dover-Foxcroft in 1975. And, you know, they take off and the town just rallies around them. And then Neil Johnson, the custodian, makes the sign, the last one out of town, turn out the lights. And that becomes sort of the symbol for how the team encapsulated, how the team spirit was encapsulated in the community. And obviously became, to me, sort of the obvious title for the book because everybody remembers that sign.
And it felt like, Dave, this was not just a homecoming for you, but completing a circle and making those moments that you remembered from your youth not just come alive again, but have a deeper meaning after all these years.
You're absolutely correct on that. It's a sort of a full circle moment. You know, when I go back to that period of time in my life, and I mean, I was working at the A&P grocery store and I had no idea what my future was going to be. And based on a conversation in that store and a team that comes along at just the right time, it changed that team basically changed the course of my career and changed the course of my life. And I owe a lot to that team. And when you write the book, those feelings come up and you reconnect and rekindle those memories. It's a pretty special time to go back. I mean, it's 50 years ago, but in a way, it just seemed like last week. I mean, it meant a lot to a lot of people, including myself.
Well, it is an absolutely wonderful read. The epilogue at the end will bring you to tears, I think. It's just a tremendously powerful story. The last one out of town, turn out the lights, the epic 1975 Foxcroft Academy basketball season. Dave Albee. Dave, thank you so much for being with us. We wish you much success with the book and appreciate the time.
Rich, my pleasure, and thank you for contributing to this book. I really appreciate it.